All right, welcome back. It's time for our Wednesday edition of our nightly coronavirus update and analysis with Dr. Henry Nyman, Ph.D. Hello, Henry. How goes it?
Hello, Jeff. It's getting hot out there.
Yes,
it is. Things are definitely heating up, and they started yesterday, got worse today. It'll be much worse tomorrow. And I don't know.
As you forecast.
Dark clouds on the horizon for tomorrow, definitely. And it's really coming down to it. You know, I've kind of said this before, but you know, it bears repeating that the Trump is really kind of an anti-science kind of guy. And he's going to be up against Anthony Fauci's kind of representing the science side. And when you get the anti-science together with the science, and they've got two very, very, very different stories, there's going to be some serious clashes. And it really started yesterday when Fauci was testifying before the Senate committee. And,
From home. Quarantine.
Right. Everybody been exposed to Katie Miller. And so they're all on some type of quarantine. And, he was testifying from home. And actually, Lamar Alexander, who was chairing the committee, I think he was at home too. And, and what kind of set off the fireworks? I mean, it was known that Fauci was going to warn about, ending the lockdown too soon, and it could kind of get little fires that could start. It could start to get out of control because there's basically too much virus out there, and that's always a concern. And and then Lamar Alexander, I think, had been on some boards of schools or whatever. You know, he had an interest in University, I think, Tennessee there. Anyway, it was a university in his home state. And he wanted to get Fauci's take on it, having in-class sessions in the fall. And Fauci had been talking about antivirals and vaccines and what kind of progress was being made and when they could expect to, have something positive that would hit the market. And and he basically said that, well, it's going to be kind of heterogeneous and, some parts of the country are going to have lower levels of virus and some parts are going to have higher levels. And that expecting the vaccines or the antivirals to really affect the ability of students to return to class in the fall and to assure students and their parents that there wasn't going to be major issues with the virus was a quote unquote bridge too far. And that definitely is not what Trump wanted to hear. I mean, Trump is ready to get the economy going again, and that, definitely everybody will have, school start up in the
mind
fall
over matter,
and everybody
Henry.
Will go to
mind
class.
Over, mind and, over virus in this case.
And it's not a it's not going to be a problem. I mean, he's already said that the virus, he said the virus would disappear in April. Then he said that, it's under control and it's going down in every state. And that if anything pops up in the fall, it'll be, like little spot fires and we'll just stop them out and it won't be a problem. It'll be under control, and we don't even need a vaccine for that because we're not going to have a vaccine for the fall. Nobody's predicted a vaccine for the fall. So he's kind of taking the vaccine out of the equation and saying that, you know, this is going to happen. Don't forget,
he put Jared Kushner in charge of the Warp Speed vaccine program to get a vaccine done by the end of the year. That's Trump's goal.
Right. But even the end of the year is not going to help in the fall. And in fact, schools, unless they change, in the South, they actually start like August 1st. So that's what they did in the swine flu pandemic for sure. And, I'm not sure that anything's changed, you know, and, although I guess conceivably they could push it back a couple of weeks just to give a few more weeks to get the virus under control, which isn't really going to make any difference. But, actually, the further back they push it, the further into the fall they're going to get in. Probably the worse it's going to be as far as the virus is concerned. So, in any event, he Fauci gave this answer that Trump didn't want to hear. And then this morning, the Cal State system said no in-house classes in the fall. So they've already made their decision, and they announced
the whole
Cal State University system's got about 24 campuses, and just under 500,000 students. So it's all in California, and it's, you know, it's not the UC system, you know, but they'll probably follow suit. These are, you know, like Cal State, whatever, you know, and Fullerton and Cal State San Diego and Cal State,
lots of them.
There's literally, I think I looked them up. I think there's literally 24 campuses in the state, and the enrollment I think was 481,000 and change. So a lot of students, a lot of campuses, and it's not like, oh, we'll see in July or we'll see in August. It was not going to happen. And so then,
well, there's a little good silver lining to that. A lot of them won't be able to get into deeper student loan trouble.
Right. Well,
anyway, go on.
They may still be on the vacation.
The automatic payment. Who knows?
Well, actually, if they're in school, they don't have a payment. So that's not relevant. It's the ones that have graduated that got that. But Trump was in a meeting this afternoon or this morning, sometime today, and the subject of classes starting in the fall came up, and he was asked for comments on what Fauci had said about not being able to offer assistance in getting schools open, and some probably were going to have issues with having classes, you know, in-house classes, not online classes, but in-house classes. And then Trump kind of went off. Apparently, a lot of the commentators on Fox News were kind of going after, or not Fox News, just Fox commentaries, you know, it's more the commentaries of the news. We're attacking Fauci and saying, yeah, he didn't get elected by anybody, and you know, he's been wrong before, and you know, he's, you know, saying this, that, and the other thing, and so it was basically an all-out attack, and that kind of got a couple revved up so that he could kind of jump on board. And so he said, well, I was surprised to hear that. You know, he kind of wants to have it both ways or something, or taking both sides. And, you know, that, Let's see, what did he say? He said, it's not acceptable answers. So it's kind of like...
That was what he said? Not acceptable answers?
Those were his exact words, yes.
Wow.
Not acceptable answers. And so it's kind of like, doesn't have anything to do with that's not true, or I don't think so, or we have a difference of opinion. It's not acceptable answers. So that's what I say. This is the anti-science president. I mean, he's got his parallel universe that he's created that's in his head, and that everybody's supposed to, you know... hop on the bandwagon. If he says you don't need a vaccine, and if he says there's definitely going to be classes, and he's essentially saying there'll be classes for everybody because he's got to get the economy revved up, and you know, and some people have trouble going back to work if their kids are not in school, and so he sees everybody back at school. I mean, he was talking about them going back to school for a couple of weeks this session. And, you know, that was, I thought, one of the dumbest things. I mean, the risk-reward that everybody's out of class and all of a sudden you got to put everybody back in class for a week or two to finish off the spring semester. It was kind of nuts, although I think he wants people back in class so that he can, you know, give his speech to the Naval Academy. Anyway, that's another story. But the bottom line was that he didn't find it was acceptable, and it didn't fit his reality. And I mean, all that Fauci really said was that you know, as far as vaccines were concerned, and nobody's expecting a vaccine to be ready by the fall. And same thing with the antivirals. You know, he likes remdesivir, but that was kind of a first step that kind of improved patients enough to get out a few days earlier. So it was having effect on the virus, but you know, it would be much better if there's one or two other antivirals that could be done in combination, and kind of compared it to the protease inhibitors with HIV, and the first one was AZT, and it, you know, it had an effect, but it, in and of itself, didn't really work that well. Resistance developed, and but that kind of indicated that the virus was vulnerable. And if they had a bunch of protease inhibitors or attacked the virus at a couple different points simultaneously, they can get the virus under control because it couldn't get resistance to multiple drugs at the same time. So the same idea would apply to SARS-CoV, that if you had more than one antiviral attacking more than one target, that they could have an additive effect. And there are several combinations that are currently you know, in clinical trials right now, but they're not going to have, you know, results and have the drugs in volume to make a significant dent, because there's so much virus in the United States, but there's also virus worldwide. And so you kind of need a global approach if you're really going to get, you know, enough of the virus under control. So it would make a difference. And so, it was not that unexpected an answer, but in Trump's view, it was unacceptable. And, and the problem is that his version of reality is, got some serious issues up and down. I mean, another area that was discussed yesterday let's see, I lost my train of thought here. I'll
you get back to it.
That.
You come back to it. So he didn't do anything today. He took the day off, right?
Right. This was all from yesterday's testimony, and It was this combination that really got Trump going. That when he heard the California, he doesn't like California to begin with, and they've already made their decision, no class, and mm-hmm. you know that other universities are going to hear the same thing, and they're going to sure. say, well, yeah, that's what they're doing, and then it's only going to get worse because tomorrow there's going to be another hearing, and Rick Bright is going to be testifying. Rick Bright was the person who was in charge of vaccines for BARDA and didn't want to go along with Trump's plan to mm-hmm. to make hydroxychloroquine available to mm-hmm. the general public without who weren't in trials and just. Flood New York and New Jersey was what the plan was, and Rick Bright said that he didn't think that the government should be pushing unproven drugs. It really has to go through some type of clinical trial and show efficacy before they can start just mm-hmm. kind of handing it out to the world. And
that was the end of him.
That created some friction, right, and that he was kind of transferred, and so he filed suit under whistleblower and is still contesting the transfer, but he's going to be talking tomorrow, and he released a little synopsis of what he's going to talk about, and he mentioned that 2020 was going to be has the potential if they don't have a plan. I mean, that was one of the areas that he was involved with, was to actually have a national plan to combat the pandemic, and that's mm-hmm. still absent. There is no national plan. There's just we can get you a little bit more test kits, but it's all up to the state, and we're just kind of
well, it's like the little line. Dutch boy. He's running around sticking his finger in holes, and it's just
right,
silly.
Right, right.
It's totally silly.
There's no plan. So anyway, Rick Bright said that if they don't come up with a plan, mm-hmm. that 2020 may be the darkest winter in modern history.
When did he say that? When did he say that?
He said that in today's prepared remarks for tomorrow's testimony.
Wow.
So you can hear it right out of his mouth tomorrow, but it's already in writing today.
That's give us that statement again, Henry. That's a very that's from him, and I respect the guy. That's a very very powerful statement.
He said that if there's not a national plan and is not implemented, that 2020 has the potential to be the darkest winter in modern history. He also said that it's got the potential to eclipse 1918, where 50 million died.
I hope all of you are listening very carefully to this. I didn't know about this. This is very concerning to me. Rick Bright knows things that we don't know. Maybe you know, Henry. I don't know. But for him to say something like that, that's extraordinary. That suggests several things, not the least of which is the potential for this virus to run roughshod and rampant over humanity at large in perhaps a mutated, more virulent form. I don't know. Something's up. There's a reason he said that. And that's
right.
We don't have enough time to wait around for Trump and Kushner to come up with another, quote, plan, because they can't. They haven't. They won't. Now, what's Rick? See, I want to know what Rick Bright knows that would make him say something like that. Well, this is going to make a lot of noise tomorrow. You watch. You watch.
Well,
you will.
Right, right. But
just watch.
I mean, that's why I said there's going to be fireworks, because most scientists know that this virus is, I mean, if they got a background in virology or epidemiology or even been paying attention, I mean, they would have to be in those fields. They know from history They know from 1918. They know from the swine flu pandemic that it's very common for the virus to make an appearance in the spring and then be much more of a problem in the fall.
And, well, he's talking about an enormous problem in the fall. That's his suggestion, anyway.
Well, they kind of said that to Trump, too. I mean, they basically said that unless you do this lockdown, that there's going to be, in the United States, it's going to be like between 1.1 and 2.4 million deaths. And so that those were the numbers that kind of convinced them. And then they said, you know, if you do the lockdown, then it's going to be more in the 100 or 200,000 deaths. And, you know, just as a reminder, and then the lockdown looked like it was starting to flatten the curve. And then they issued a revised estimate and lowered it down to 60,000. And then Trump went ahead and did his own embellishment of that number and said, well, we should probably be able to do better than that. We should be able to get it down to 50,000. And he said that when it was like, you know, 40 something and there were 2,000 cases a day. So it's clear that within a few days, it was already going to be at 50,000. So there was no way it was going to be 50,000. And it was pretty clear that the 60,000 was pretty optimistic because it was, you know, going to be a week after that, it would get to 60,000. And that's exactly what happened. It did get to 50,000 a few days later, and then it got to 60,000 a week later, or a week and a half later. And then they changed the revision, and they went up to 72,000 or something like that. And then they changed it and went up to 80-something thousand. And then they went up to 134,000. And the latest, they're now up to 147,000. So they're up to 150,000. And so they're in the 100 to 200,000 range that they originally said. And, you know, Trump's 50,000 and 40,000, I mean, 50,000 and 60,000, and then he upped it to 70,000, and then he upped it to 80,000 or 90,000 or maybe 100,000. And now it's pretty clear. I mean, there were like 1,800 new deaths today, and it's up to, I think it's 85,000 now, so it should be up to 90,000 probably this weekend, and should be up to 100,000 by next
June
week, by next weekend
before so, June.
No, this month. Yeah,
this weekend before June. That's right.
Yeah. It's going to be in May when. You know, after the virus is gone in April, you know, it's going to get up to 100,000 this month, and the new projection is that there's going to be 50 more thousand added in the next month. So, and at the rate it's been going, that might be another underestimate if you know there's enough. Unlocking of the lockdown.
Here's an observation. We've got a lot of people who are going to be coming out of lockdown, re-entering, however truncated, society. They haven't been around normal exposure to all manner of pathogens for a couple of months. They've been home. They've been allegedly clean. Right. They've been sterile. They've been this and that. Are they not going to be more vulnerable to perhaps a fairly wide array of minor illnesses, colds, flus, not flus, but other sinus infections, sore throats? Is that possible, or am I missing the boat here?
I mean, usually most of these respiratory things do calm down over the summer because people are outside more.
Yeah, that's right.
And sunlight kills most viruses.
Ultraviolet light.
It's not just the ultraviolet light in your body somewhere that basically kills the virus when it's outside. It doesn't have to be in your body. And And most respiratory illnesses drop down over the summer. I mean, there's some. I mean, I think what the problem's going to be is the other issue with the SARS-CoV-2 in children is these autoimmune type of anaphylactic shock type of reaction, and that could get increased and become more severe from the the viruses that enteroviruses, which are related to the polio virus.
And yeah, we had an enterovirus problem here some years ago.
Right. Well, it's been coming up. It's been coming up every other year. So it's high, and then it goes down the next year, and then it goes high again and down. And so we're due, and that usually is the virus kind of hits over the summer, and then they start getting the paralysis in the early fall. So September, October, they start getting paralysis. And this is kind of an immune reaction to the virus. And the virus is somewhat neurotropic. And so the immune reaction causes neurological problems. Now, if you have children that basically are susceptible to an enterovirus infection over the summer, and then they're also susceptible to the SARS-CoV, both of those are capable of eliciting this kind of anaphylactic shock type of immunological reaction. And they target the virus wherever it is, and so they might have the SARS, COVID in the heart, and they might have the enterovirus in. And to have that combination, that would be the combination I'd be concerned about. Not so much because people are indoors, but because this virus is so widespread in the U.S.
You saw an important point. You saw what happened in New York. Cuomo announced that 60-some% of all the new cases were from people who have been apparently locked down, quarantined in their homes. And he says, how are they getting infected? Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, my guess is, that's where they are, but they still, go out and get food.
Sneak out.
And they go and do X, Y, and Z, and there's interactions and,
Well, they'd have
recently,
to. That would be
unless they're getting deliveries, right.
Yeah.
Right. So, the fact that they're in their home doesn't mean that they got infected in their home. It means that, they're not essential workers, so they're not taking the subway every day, and they're not getting into, other kind of crowded places they might get if they're essential workers. So it's not like the majority are getting infected because they're, cashiers at a food store and they have a lot of interaction with the customers there, or they're making deliveries and they're getting interactions. Oh, a lot of the deliveries, I just kind of leave it. You pay your credit card, and there's actually literally no interaction between the person delivering it. They just kind of leave it, and it's at your front door, or there's pickups, and they just put it in the back of the car, and again, there's no interaction. So, but I think there's more of a problem for these autoimmune issues. And the reason that's going to be a big deal is because there's a delay. So these cases are coming up late. That a lot of these cases actually don't even have the virus anymore. They're negative on the PCR test. but they're positive on the antibody test. So they've been, they were infected, and then they cleared the virus, but the immune response that cleared the virus ended up causing these other problems. And the reason I think it's going to be a big deal is I think they're up to 100 cases in New York, but mm-hmm. there are cases in like 17 states now in the U.S. And there's examples that have been written up in England. And there's other cases that are in Italy. And I'm pretty sure that these are all, most of these are going to be related to this Italian lineage.
Is this new issue you're talking about piggybacking on the Italian strain, or is it some kind of a cofactor with the virus that just happens to create this new, relatively new syndrome?
Now, the syndrome is the immune system attacking the virus. It's basically, you got the virus, it's mm-hmm. creating a lot of virus, it's going to the wrong places, so it's going to the heart, and the immune system sees it.
Ouch.
It's a foreign attack, mm-hmm. and they start making antibodies to get it under control, and because mm-hmm. the virus is growing so quickly, their immune system gets cranked up very, very high, and then in the process of attacking the virus, they mm-hmm. start attacking the cells that are producing the virus, and then the cells that are nearby that don't even have to have the virus, they've got all this mm-hmm. antibody that's kind of out of control, and so the immune response causes the damage. So it's kind of an autoimmune thing. It's kind of the same thing happens with anaphylactic shock. That's usually with bacteria, but it's still uh-huh. the same concept. It's the immune system
right.
cranked up and causing that type of damage. But frequently what happens is the immune system stays revved up even after it's gotten rid of the virus. And so they start getting these symptoms that they end up going to the doctor, and they don't necessarily have respiratory because they're not really attacking the lungs as much as they're attacking the heart in many instances. And mm-hmm. And then they have this rash, and they have these abdominal cramps, and sometimes they have rapid breathing, and they've got usually have a fever, and it isn't going away because they've got this immune system cranked up.
Low fever, 99, 100.
And then they go into the hospital, and then that's when they get diagnosed. So now that it's being reported, mm-hmm. you know, there's more parents that are more likely to take their child in. And it's probably a whole spectrum. I mean, I've heard some say, well, you know, if your child has this rash or fever and it's persistent and it just doesn't seem to be going away, that's when you should go see a doctor. But I think that's just one end of the spectrum. That there's other ones that is much milder, you know, that they have this rash and maybe it does resolve and go away and they never see the doctor. But they're only seeing part of the spectrum. You know, they're seeing the more severe part. They're not seeing the milder part. And my guess is this virus is causing this in a lot of children, especially if they got a high concentration of the Italian lineage. Mm-hmm. And that's why I say if you get something else thrown on top of it, you get an enterovirus thrown in there, and you've got the immune system already cranked up from the SARS virus, then the two viruses can kind of work in combination and create more severe disease. Because the same thing with the paralysis, that by the time they go and see the doctor, they can't pick up the enterovirus anymore. They know that there's been outbreaks of the enterovirus in the area, and a lot of children have been infected, and most of the children don't develop the paralysis because they don't really generate as big of a immune response. But the combination, I think, may end up creating a lot more of these cases over the summer. And the reason that's going to be a problem is because of this, the schools. Because, you know, the original story was that the children don't really, you know, they're not really at risk. You know, even if they get infected, they're going to have a mild course and, you know, they'll get a little bit of immunity and they're not going to get hospitalized, or if they do get hospitalized, they're not going to go on a ventilator.
Well, you can make that statement with assurance after studying this for 4 months. We've watched it. So this is not just a one-off thing.
And so that's, I mean, Fauci brought that up yesterday also, because Rand Paul was there and said, oh, yeah, not that many children get, you know, die from this. And, you know, the case fatality rate is infinitesimally small. And Fauci said, well, you know, that might be for the fatalities, but, you know, there's this new syndrome that's come up, and we really don't fully understand it now, why, you know, how common it is. You know, it seems to be fairly rare, but is just now being studied, and that may cause problems for opening the schools also. So that was the other thing that came up. And that's exactly what's going to happen. I mean, Trump is nuts. I mean, he thinks that he can go and say, oh, you have to have the schools open. He might even issue some type of bizarre proclamation or an executive order or something. The schools, you know, the children don't attend in-house schooling. They won't get credit for it, and it's going to ruin their career, you know, da-da-da-da-da. You know, something along those lines. And if he does do something like that, the kids are going to go back to school, and they're going to start spreading the virus. And now they know what to look for. And the parents are going to see this. Even the milder cases, they're going to say, well, you know, they seem to have had the virus and they got over that, but now they've got this rash. I'm worried about the anaphylactic shock. And they're going to go to see the pediatrician. And then they're going to say, why'd you open the schools back up? You know, they didn't have this problem in the spring, and there was less virus than there is in the fall. So how can you have the schools open? And the parents are just going to, they're either going to demand the schools get closed, or they're going to withhold the kids from school. And there's no way this is going to work. You know, it might work in some areas initially, but it's going to spread like the virus. They're going to hear about these outbreaks at this school and these outbreaks at that school. And, you know, the kids either A, developed this syndrome and they have this rash and they're worried about what it might have done to their heart. And then they're going to worry about, well, you know, I didn't get sick at work, but the kids came home and they were coughing and, you know, we took them to the doctor. Now I'm coughing. And da 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 da, and they're going to act as a vector, and it's going to be real obvious to the parent that, you know, the reason they got COVID is because their kid went to school and brought the virus back to the house, and they got infected, and then they're going to spread it to the workplace, because they're back at work now, and because things have loosened up. And since you can transmit it when you're asymptomatic or when you have very mild cases, then all of a sudden it's going to start spreading at the different occupations. And then all of a sudden everything's going to shut down. So you're going to have the problem with people going back to work, and you're going to have the problem with kids going back to school. What's supposed to happen is something that the U.S. really isn't ready for yet. I mean, what's supposed to happen is, A, the level of the virus should be a lot lower than it is. And that's what the idea of the 14 days of declining numbers of cases is supposed to represent. And then the original guideline, which are suppressed now by Trump. I mean, Trump hasn't allowed the guidelines to be published by the CDC. And they keep on bringing up objections and saying, oh, this is the bar is too high. You know, you really shouldn't have to do this and you really shouldn't have to do that. And, you know, they said, oh, these guidelines are not going to see the light of day, quote unquote. And so now you've got all of these states trying to open up and they don't have any real guidelines. So each governor is creating their own set of guidelines, and part of the guidelines is there should be something fairly uniform. You can't really be bouncing around with one set in one state and one in the adjacent state. It's going to create all kinds of problems. If it gets under control at one state, the people will drive to the other state and bring the virus in there. So the one that got it under control is going to get out of control. And that's another example that the Trump, who has no background and nothing about infectious diseases and controlling this, has to rely upon the CDC, but he says, well, we know more than the CDC. So, oh, you can't do this and you can't do that. And meanwhile, there's no guidance. So number one, people are just like the testing. They were flying blind then. And now the reopening of schools, reopening of houses of worship, reopening of the workplace, all of that is being done blind. And then the idea is to get the number of cases down to a manageable level so that you can do contact tracing. And then you can do what Trump said, that, you know, if there's an outbreak here, you can identify who that is, who the contacts are, make sure the contacts are quarantined so that the virus doesn't continue to spread out from these cases. And because there's so much virus, you need a whole army of tracers, like 100,000 people. And they need to be trained. And they don't have 100,000 people. And they don't even have the training down yet. And so nothing is in place. And so things are easing up. But the idea was that, A, you can do the contact tracing. B, you would have the enough hospital beds that you would be able to keep this under control so you don't overwhelm the healthcare delivery. And you're starting out relatively high. I mean, it's lower, so it's under control right now, but it's not going to take that much. And that's what Fauci was warning about, that, you know, just a little bit can get this off and running again. And you don't really have these controls in place to manage that and to avoid outbreak exploding.
Yeah. Regarding this $100 billion program to train 100,000 contact tracers around the country and using these mobile medical vans in neighborhoods and to go door to door, is far too much like the Gestapo or Stasi for me. I'll never accept that.
Well,
I don't think that's going
door to door. It's all going to be.
Well, that's the plan. That's the plan.
No,
I know
the plan. Bloomberg's got a plan for New York, and it's basically everything's done by phone, and the content, they're not knocking on the doors. I mean, this, I don't know what you're reading. You're reading
Ventura
garbage.
County, California is one, just a starting point. I'll send you the story. This is what they've announced they're doing. I'll send it anyway.
They won't even do the census. I mean, they won't go door to door.
I understand.
Let me send you
the Ventura County thing.
Okay,
it's very concerning. The guy was the guy was an idiot. Their health director, an idiot.
Yeah,
the statement he made.
So that's not, that's what I'm saying. There are guidelines. The guidelines are suppressed. The governments can't get the guidelines, so they make up their own story.
It's crazy to watch all this. Yes, of course.
Right. So that's what the problem is. There are programs. I mean, Bloomberg is committing money for New York. They're already hiring people. They're going to have this whole army, and There's no contact. Everything is being done by phone. I mean, basically, to be a tracer, you need a laptop and a cell phone. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You don't need a car. You're not going to be knocking door to door. You're not going to.
I'm glad to hear this. I hadn't read it. I'm glad. This is good.
That's just the opposite, because that's just going to spread the virus.
Nobody's going to be going out
and knocking on doors, right, and going in and interviewing people in person.
This Ventura County thing is crazy. And I'm concerned that other counties are going to jump on board with it. We'll see.
No, they're not going to. It doesn't make any sense. The whole idea is to not have contact. Just from an infectious disease standpoint, the way.
Here's a family that's observed quarantine procedures. All of a sudden, there's a knock on the door from somebody. It's like delivering food on the Corona Princess. They go door to door, and they're infected. What are they doing?
There's not going to be any door to door. I mean, the CDC knows how to do contact tracing. I mean, the reason this collapsed was because they didn't have tests. They have to have enough tests to test the contacts and find out whether the contacts are infected or not. I mean, so you need that type of tracing is to find out who's positive and who's negative. But as far as monitoring these people and talking to these people and calling up to find out if they're really contacts, that's going to be done by phone or by email.
They're months away from being able to do that. Months away to train all of us. It's ridiculous.
Exactly. And that's what I'm saying, that the plan is not going to work. And what's going to happen is that the virus is going to start to spread. It's already got all these hot spots. It's got hot spots at processing plants. It's got hot spots at prisons. It's got hot spots at long-term care facilities. So there's plenty of virus out there. And that by having more interactions with employees at these facilities, moving about in their community and having other people and having the contacts that they have moving about, that's what's going to spread the virus. And without having a large number of kits available to test contacts, and without having an army of people to identify who the contacts are and whether they really are contacts, most of which is going to be done by phone, you know, or by email. It's not going to be done by contacts. It's a non-starter.
It's not going to happen. This isn't a plan. It's too late.
It is a plan. It's just not ready.
Yeah, you know, it's not viable at this time at all.
Right. So what's going to happen is, instead of getting the level of virus reduced so it's manageable, so you can have a number of contacts that you can reach and basically stop the spread. I mean, the numbers got too high, which is why they went to mitigation, because there were, A, they didn't have the test kit.
Right.
B, they didn't have the personnel. And C, it was everywhere. And so they were just trying to, it was already out of control. And that's what's going to happen in the fall. So the idea that you're going to go ahead and open up the schools, and you're going to have the schools, all these high concentrations of students, and that the virus isn't going to take off and run through those populations, it's nuts. You can look at swine flu and see exactly what happened.
Absolutely.
And this virus transmits more easily than flu.
Ever seen a high school corridor, for example, or an elementary school corridor?
Right.
Forget it.
Right. So there's no way you're going to have schools open. In-class schools open. I mean, you can have online schools, but in-class schools open with the level of virus that's around now compounded by the amount of virus which is going to be around in the fall, and have this under control. And as they follow the scenario where they're going to open up the schools in the South on August 1st, there are going to be stories all over the place by the time, you know, late August comes around, and these schools are going to look at this and say, you know, they're not quite open yet, and they're going to know it's nonsense. You know, they're just going to have this total disaster, and they're going to know that now. they're not living this Trump fantasy.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know,
that's
the virus
right.
is going to disappear, well, and it's going to go away. It didn't disappear in April. It didn't disappear in May. It's not going to be gone in July.
In June.
Because especially because you're easing things up, and it's going to spread the virus. I mean, everybody knows the virus is going to spread. The question is whether you can kind of control it so it doesn't get totally out of control. And there aren't enough. The viral level is not low enough, and the number of tracers is not high enough to have any chance of having
no chance.
Any
None.
Control.
No chance. All right. Okay. Got to run. Rick Bright's statement, very interesting. We'll cover this again tomorrow night with an audio clip.
It'll be exciting tomorrow. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Very good. Okay, Henry. Thanks.
Okay. Sounds good. Talk to you then. Okay. Take care.
All right. Okay. We will be right back. Tomorrow night should be another interesting day. In the meantime, remember vitamin D, selenium, zinc, colloidal silver, and Allison C. That's the best I can offer. And that's a damn good group. All right, we'll be right back tomorrow night. Take care.